Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, Editor-in-Chief at Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a Senior Writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and technologies that we use every day.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll explore an idea that originated thousands of years ago. And despite plenty of scientific evidence to the contrary, it mysteriously persists today. The notion that the world is flat.
Now, Earth is commonly known to be a sphere. It's not perfect. It's more of an oblong spheroid, if you want to be completely technical about it. But it's still a sphere. And this is based on observations and science that date to thousands of years ago.
And in spite of that, despite all of the scientific evidence, there's a group of people who embrace this idea that the Earth is flat.
Right. There's a flat Earth society, which claims that it has members around the globe. Well, let's not even get into that one. and is allegedly the world's oldest official flat Earth organization, dating to the 1800s.
And these believers in flat Earth actually come to scientific quote unquote conferences.
Scientific conferences would be a bit of a stretch.
No, I mean they do claim that they're scientific.
Yeah, of course they do. So okay, but what does it mean to believe in a flat Earth?
Most people who believe the Earth is flat, they picture the Earth as basically a flat pancake. The North Pole sits roughly at the center and of this disk. And then so Antarctica is at the edges and forms this sort of giant ice wall around the planet's circumference. And then the equator forms a ring between the two.
Uh-huh. So actually, I wrote earlier in 2019 about a cruise that had been announced by the Flat Earth International Conference, one of these scientific conferences. I wish there was, like, I don't know what the audio equivalent of doing air quotes is, but I feel like there really needs air quotes. So in 2019, the Flat Earth International Conference announced on its website that they were going to have a cruise that would take place at some point in 2020 that would travel to the ice wall. There are some drawbacks with the idea of taking a ship on a flat Earth-seeking quest. And
they're using technologies that are basically that are based on and rely on the fact that the Earth is a globe.
Right. Something called GPS. Pretty much that's how boats navigate.
Right. They have the three triangulating signals, and it wouldn't work on a flat surface.
Right. Okay. But yeah, again, let's put that aside for now. So people who believe in a flat Earth, they look at the evidence that is used by most to support the notion that Earth is a globe. And they say that gravity is an illusion, that photos are faked, that GPS devices are rigged, that scientists who claim that Earth is a sphere are part of some vast global conspiracy. For what purpose? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the scientists would be getting out of that. But somehow
Photos of the blue marble photos, perhaps.
Well, no. So they're promoting that because they have some ulterior motive for making us all believe that the Earth is a globe when it really isn't. It's a little murky. But maybe the biggest mystery here is why people still believe in a flat Earth in the 21st century when we have so much evidence showing that it's just not.
And in this episode, we're going to unpack how flat earthers justify this scientifically inaccurate worldview and how scientists have demonstrated over millennia that the opposite is true and Earth is, in fact, a globe.
Earth is big. All right. It's as planets go, it's not the biggest planet in the solar system, but it's big enough. It's got a diameter of about 8,000 miles, which is nearly 13,000 kilometers. And we humans are quite small by comparison. So when you stand in a flat landscape and you look around you, you look to the horizon in every direction, you don't see a curve. So from that perspective, you could say, yes, the planet does look flat.
So that brings us to our first mystery. How do we know that the Earth is round in the first place?
Okay, well, it's a question of perspective. The higher you are, the farther you can see. And so images that have been taken from far up reveal Earth's curve. Now, you'd think, oh, well, then I should be able to see it on a plane.
Right.
But that's not, it's actually still a little tricky to see from a plane.
So from a plane, if you're at an altitude about 35,000 feet, you still need a 60-degree field of view to be able to actually see that curvature because Earth is so big.
Right, and that's more than you're going to get in your average passenger window on a commercial flight. So, and also the windows also distort light, and what that does is that gives an additional optical bend. So what you're seeing from, you know, when you're just, you know, when you're in an airplane, you're looking out the window, you're going to get a little bit of distortion, and also it's just not wide enough for you to be able to really see the curvature. But the curve is visible to pilots in NASA high-altitude research aircraft, which fly at about 65,000 feet.
And it doesn't have to be a plane to see this curve. In January 2017, students at the University of Leicester in the UK, they strapped cameras to a weather balloon, and then they sent it up to about 77,000 feet or 24 kilometers above Earth's surface, which is well above the level needed to view Earth's curve.
And then what did the camera see?
The cameras captured footage showing the horizon's curve,
okay,
of
so,
course.
Right. And then, of course, there's the famous blue marble photo of Earth, which was taken in 1972 on December 7th. And it was from a distance of about 18,000 miles or 29,000 kilometers above Earth's surface by the crew of the Apollo 17 spacecraft as they were on their way to the moon.
And that's the famous photo that shows Earth as a sphere.
Right. But even before any of this technology that let people get high enough to see this curve, scientists have also been explaining how we know Earth is round for more than 2,000 years. So, but how could they tell before we had things like rockets and satellites and weather balloons?
Turns out they just looked to the stars. So, you know, the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle wrote in his book On the Heavens, "Our observations of the stars make it evident not only that Earth is circular, but also that it is a circle of no great size. For quite a small change of position to south or north causes a manifest alteration of the horizon."
Okay, so what did he mean by
yeah.
that? Pretty words, but what was he talking about?
Basically, depending on where you are on Earth, you're going to see a different configuration of stars in the sky.
Right. So if you're in the northern hemisphere, you're going to have a different view of the stars than you will if you're in the southern hemisphere.
So if the Earth was flat, any given time you would see the same stars.
Right.
Any place you are on a flat Earth, you would see the
same
stars.
You would just have the same view.
Right.
Right. There was another ancient Greek mathematician, Eratosthenes, who he measured Earth's circumference using sunlight and shadows. And this is just, I love this so much because it's such a low-tech method, and yet it was so accurate. So he noticed that the appearance of the sun at noon in the bottom of wells was different in two neighboring Egyptian cities. So at noon in one city, the sun was directly overhead and it aligned perfectly. Like it just filled the bottoms of these wells at noon when it was right overhead. But in Alexandria at noon, a city that was nearby, the sun shone on the well walls at high noon. So it wasn't in exactly the same place.
And what was happening? Like, how did he explain that?
Well, see, he used math. He used trigonometry. So he reasoned that the difference in the angle of incoming sunlight was due to the curvature of Earth's surface. And then he measured this angle, calculated the distance between these two cities, and then related the distance between the cities to the total dimension of the globe. So let's do that.
Yeah,
let's
I was going to say, can we break that down?
Let's
a little
break
bit
that down step by step.
For those who are
yeah.
spatially challenged,
which includes me, actually. Okay, so step by step. So on a day when the sun shone on the bottom of the wells at high noon in the city Cyene, Eratosthenes measured the sun's position in the sky over Alexandria, and so it was, and there it was 7 degrees away from the zenith. So Cyene must be 7 degrees away from Alexandria, measured on a circle that is Earth's circumference. And 7 degrees is about 1/50th of a full circle, which is 360 degrees. You still with me?
Yes.
Okay, so then Eratosthenes simply multiplied the distance from Alexandria to Cyene, and it was believed to have been about 515 miles, or 830 kilometers. He multiplied that by 50. And then so from that, he calculated Earth's circumference at 26,000 miles, or 42,000 kilometers.
And how close was that to reality?
It was really, really close. It was only 5% away from the modern accepted value, which is 24,901 miles, or 40,074 kilometers.
That's incredible.
It's amazing to me that he was able to calculate it with that degree of precision using a method that was just, you know, so simple and so straightforward.
Perhaps not as technical, but sailors could actually see the curve of Earth. They would watch mountain peaks first appear over the horizon.
Right. This is just the evidence of their own eyes. But you're on a ship in the middle of the ocean and there's no land in sight. And all of a sudden you see land start to appear and you start seeing the tallest thing first. And then as you go closer, that's how things work when you are on a globe-shaped
right.
object. Right.
So if it was flat, it would just get farther away or
right.
it would disappear or
Everything would be at the same, you know, at the same level. So that only happens if you're traveling over a sphere. And this is also true for people watching ships sail away from land. So you're standing on shore and you're watching a ship, you know, goes away. It doesn't just keep getting smaller. It just eventually disappears because it's going over the curve of the horizon, which means that it's traveling over a sphere. Yeah. Right.
The Portuguese explorer Ferdinand Magellan famously sailed around the world from 1519 to 1522, and he did not encounter this ice wall that allegedly rings a flat Earth.
Right. In fact, no one has ever documented any kind of encounter with this giant ice wall. So, yeah, you'd think that by now that somewhere on the planet, someone would have just, you know, made it to the edge, encountered the wall of ice, documented the wall of ice, but so far that has not happened. So that, you know, doesn't make a great case for it actually existing.
And so what about other planets? Like, how do flat Earth believers picture other planets?
I think you can look to other planets as just yet another way of supporting the idea that Earth is a sphere, because observations of other planets from our perspective show that they rotate. And these planets were shaped by the same cosmic forces that shaped Earth. So if they're spheres, it means that Earth should be one too.
We've been talking about how flat earthers cling to this idea of a flat planet, even though it's pretty easy to disprove. But if they wanted to learn more about how scientists know the Earth is round, there's an incredible online learning resource, and that is called the Great Courses Plus.
Right. It's a series of streaming lectures on a wide range of topics. So they give you the chance to learn about psychology and philosophy and the science of Earth and mysteries of the human brain and pretty much just about any topic you can imagine.
Anything you're curious about, really.
Right.
I think with so much information flying at us on the internet, it's important to know that you're getting your information from a trusted source.
Right.
And so with the Great Courses Plus, each course is hosted by university professors, respected educators, and experts in their field. So you know you're getting information that is verified, that you can trust.
And you can take these lectures with you wherever you go. You can watch them on your desktop, and you could also watch them on your mobile device, on your tablet, on your phone, and you can download them too, which is also really handy.
So if you're taking a plane trip, you can download it before you get on the plane, learn something about history, science during your flight.
And you can watch these lectures or you can listen to them. So it's super convenient.
Mindy and I recommend checking out the course, The Inexplicable Universe, Unsolved Mysteries.
Right. And one lecture that I really, really enjoyed was Inexplicable Life, which deals with really fascinating questions like how did life emerge on Earth? What led to the tree of life? Did microbial life hitchhike to Earth on meteorites? Where might life exist in the universe? And how do scientists find it? So it's just I learned some things from watching this course. Like, I actually did not know that thinking about alien life was something that scientists were doing as far back as the 17th century.
Oh, that's incredible.
Right. So we like the Great Courses Plus a lot. And you can explore Great Courses Plus too by signing up and for a limited time only, getting an entire month for free.
And that's just for Life's Little Mysteries podcast listeners.
Right. But to start your free month trial, you must sign up today using our special URL.
Sign up now at thegreatcoursesplus.com/LLM. That's LLM for Life's Little Mysteries. Remember,
that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/LLM.
Despite all of this evidence to the contrary, people still insist that the Earth is flat. Here to talk to us about the psychology behind this belief and other conspiracy theories is Jan Willem van Pruyen, Associate Professor in Social and Organizational Psychology at Vrij University Amsterdam. Hi, Dr. van Pruyen. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem.
So what led you to get into this kind of research about belief in conspiracy theories?
Yeah, well, actually, it started with my research on injustice and morality. And at some point, I was thinking that, when we evaluate how fair or how moral we find leaders, we often don't have the right information, right? We don't know what happens behind closed doors. And at some point, I just saw an documentary about the 9/11 truth movement. And then, the penny sort of dropped. People make their own story, and often this story isn't a positive one. People fill in the blanks of what they don't know with assumptions about malpractice.
And when social psychologists like you talk about conspiracy theories, how would you define them?
Conspiracy theory, a common definition is that it's an assumption of two or more actors who collude in secrecy in order to pursue goals that are widely considered to be malevolent or evil.
And how does flat Earth fit into this realm of conspiracy theory beliefs?
Right. Well, there's various ways to go about it. I myself take a more quantitative approach, and then I mostly look to what extent these, how well endorsed such beliefs are in the wider population. So I have, for instance, have questionnaires, and I just ask people to what extent they believe in a certain conspiracy theory, and then I see what predicts it.
What separates those who believe in lots of conspiracy theories, like the Earth is flat, from people who don't believe in them or just maybe believe in one or two?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, these beliefs can be really widespread. There is not really one specific profile of the conspiracy theorist, if you like. So it really occurs in all layers of the population. Nevertheless, there are some effects that we do find. So they're, for instance, a little bit more prominent at the political extremes, both the extreme right and the extreme left. And they're also a little bit more prominent among lower educated people. So that's a couple of things that we find. We also find that it's strongly associated with feelings of nationalism. So people who are highly nationalistic and believe that their country is superior to other countries, for instance, they also tend to be high on conspiracy beliefs.
How do you study conspiracy theories and the psychology behind people's belief in these conspiracy theories? And how does that apply to flat Earth beliefs?
Well, actually, there have been psychologists who have sort of identified a tendency to believe conspiracy theories also as sort of a personality trait that people can vary on. So they call it conspiracy mentality. And that's a general tendency to be inclined to see to assume conspiracies at work in the world. So yeah, that's an individual difference trait. And you're right. Pretty much the best predictor of belief in one conspiracy theory is belief in a different one. We actually have done some research recently together with a Dutch political scientist and a Dutch national newspaper who funded it. So it was also I published in this newspaper actually. And we looked at more mundane conspiracy theories, but also the more bizarre ones. And the bizarre ones included the flat Earth. It included beliefs such as that the world is ruled by alien lizards. That's also a common one. Chemtrails, you probably also heard of chemtrails. Yep. So we also, that was pretty interesting.
What have you found in this research?
That was a study in which we looked at voting intentions. Now, most conspiracy theories are located at the political extremes. In the Netherlands, it's in our survey, it was a little stronger at the right extreme, actually. I would suspect that to be the same in the States, actually. But when we looked at actual voting behavior, something peculiar happened when the conspiracy theories became too bizarre. So flat earthers, when looking at their voting behavior, what we actually found was they didn't necessarily vote for an extreme party. We found that they didn't vote. So they were so far out of the system. Out of touch with society, so to speak, that they also didn't try to be part of it anymore.
When people's conspiracy theories are disproven, as with the flat earth, how can they continue believing in them?
Here's my theory about it. Let me put it this way. I think a couple of things are part of it. Well, first of all, I think that we also find that in our research, actually, conspiracy theories are strongly related also with the tendency to rely on your intuitions. So to not rely on analytic thinking or evidence, but on your own intuitions. Now, when we walk around in our daily life, so when we walk on the street, for instance, the earth doesn't feel round, right? So that can be, I think, one aspect of it. A second aspect that also contributes to it, I would say, is that these are people that have so little trust in institutions and in authorities and expertise and what have you, that, you know, at some point they may have reached the stage that whatever scientists have said in the past must be a lie. And, you know, it the moment you embrace a conspiracy theory like that, people start dismissing all the evidence. Huh? So you know, the NASA is, of course, in it because they fabricate all these satellite pictures. Airplane companies are in it because these airplane windows, if you're at up at 10 kilometers, I don't know how many feet that is, but 10 kilometers, yeah. I think in kilometers, but if you're at 10 kilometers, you can see it, you can see the curvature, right? And you know, but these airplane windows have deliberately been fabricated to create that illusion, to persuade the public of this big lie. So yeah, I think it's a combination of factors of relying too much on your own intuitions and a deep-rooted distrust of authorities, institutions, and expertise. But still, even when taking into account those factors, I must say it still amazes me how people swipe away with one brushstroke 500 years of science.
I've been talking to Jan Willem van Prooyen, Associate Professor in Social and Organizational Psychology at Vrije University Amsterdam. Dr. van Prooyen, thanks so much for talking with us.
Yeah, no problem. Bye-bye.
So we're really having a ball talking about these flat Earth mysteries, aren't we, Gina?
We are.
And we'll get back to them soon. But first, we're going to bounce on over to How It Works, the action-packed magazine bursting with exciting information about science and technology.
In How It Works, fascinating articles cover a wide range of topics with amazing illustrations and photos that bring science and technology to life. You'll learn something new every month, and it's great for all ages and for the whole family.
In the latest issue, How It Works explores natural wonders of the solar system, like Earth, which is a pretty amazing and spherical planet. It's got liquid water, it's got air, it's got life, you know, all our stuff is here. But what's so special about the other worlds that are orbiting our sun?
Well, of course, we have Mars, which has the tallest volcano in the solar system, Olympus Mons. It's over 15 miles or 25 kilometers high and 387 miles or 624 kilometers wide.
And compared to Everest, which Everest is only about 6 miles or 9 kilometers high. And yeah. Olympus Mons is a shield volcano, which means that it formed over millions of years as lava oozed and then cooled and built up and creating a shield appearance, which actually you can find out more about in our prior episode about volcanoes.
That's right.
So Mars is pretty incredible, but Saturn's moon Titan is also fairly amazing because it has these slow motion methane raindrops that fall from the sky. So kind of like how Earth has a water cycle of, you know, evaporation, condensation, Titan has something similar except with methane. So it has surface lakes that are methane lakes, and methane evaporates from the surface lakes. Volcanoes also heat methane in the crust, and then all this evaporated methane is sent into the atmosphere, which is mostly nitrogen. And then these methane clouds form in Titan's atmosphere. And then when it cools, they fall as rain.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then another sort of space weather phenomenon happens on Jupiter, and it's called the giant red spot. It's the signature spot. It's this huge spinning storm. It's spinning at more than 267 miles per hour or
right.
430 kilometers per hour.
If you've seen images of Jupiter, then you recognize this giant red spot. And in fact, this has been seen in observations made from Earth for at least 400 years. And it's actually bigger than Earth.
It's amazing. But recently, scientists have found that it's been shrinking and changing shape. It's growing rounder. So they don't know why, but NASA's Juno mission is gathering data on that.
And another amazing place in our solar system is the moon of Uranus called Miranda. And Miranda has the solar system's tallest cliff, which is about 12 miles or 20 kilometers high. And that's taller than 45 Empire State Buildings.
So if you were to fall off that cliff?
Well, actually, if you fell off from that cliff, it would take you 12 minutes to reach the bottom because gravity on Miranda is very weak. So you could fall off that cliff and you'd be just fine.
Another wonder of the solar system is our favorite planet, not planet Pluto.
Right. And there was an article recently published on Life Science about Pluto.
Right. So Pluto has a heart, and we discovered that in 2015, but it's an icy one.
It's a cold, cold heart.
So this heart has two lobes, like hearts do, and the eastern lobe is kind of scraggly mountains, and the western side is smooth nitrogen ice plains. And so in the recent article, we discuss recent research showing how this heart, which mostly the western lobe, is kind of beating.
So Pluto has a beating heart.
Right.
Okay. What does that mean?
So basically, it's driving this circulation there, this atmospheric circulation, sort of like winds. And what happens is this exotic nitrogen ice in the western lobe of the heart vaporizes during the day, and it condenses into ice again at night. And all of that that process, vaporizing and condensing, causes nitrogen winds to blow. And these winds, like sort of like weather on Earth, they carry heat around, and they also carry particles of haze and grains of ice westward.
So quite a few natural wonders to be had in the solar system.
And you can find out more about everyday mysteries of science and technology and how it works. Subscribe today to save over 80% and get 3 issues for just $3 or £3. Visit myfavoritemagazines.co.uk/how20 and search for How It Works.
Plus, exclusively for listeners of Life's Little Mysteries, you can get 2 free ebooks worth $40 when you subscribe. There's The Book of Dogs and Canines and the book Big Cats and African Wildlife, and you can get them both delivered straight to your email absolutely free. Just visit myfavoritemagazines.co.uk/how20 and search for How It Works.
You can also visit Live Science to read more about how Pluto's famous heart powers icy winds on the dwarf planet. The link is in the show notes.
Now, we were talking about the natural wonders of the solar system, and, you know, of course, you know, we're talking about moons, and then we talked about Pluto, and, you know, for a long time, Pluto was considered a planet, and it's not anymore.
Right, and there's scientific consensus now that it's a dwarf planet. Mm-hmm. So in a similar way, perhaps, people continue believing the Earth is flat, despite the gobs and gobs of scientific evidence to the contrary.
Right. There are a lot of people that became very emotionally invested in the idea that Pluto was a planet, and they really don't want to let go of it.
People really don't want to let go of their idea that the Earth is flat either, you know. And despite there being several things that just don't work if you're living on a flat Earth, you know, even these huge astronomical events, lunar eclipses, even the equinoxes, they don't work if you're living on a flat Earth.
Right. And these are, you know, things that seem like they're big, important clues that, you know, anybody can observe that would just tell you immediately that you're living on a sphere. And so that brings us to our next mystery.
How do flat earthers explain lunar eclipses and equinoxes? And why don't we fall off the planet?
All right, so let's start with lunar eclipses. What happens during a lunar eclipse?
Okay, so lunar eclipse happens when Earth's shadow blocks the sun's light, which otherwise would reflect off the moon. And so Aristotle, this is thousands of years ago, noted that during the eclipse, Earth's shadow on the face of the sun looked curved.
Okay, and that curve was, in spite of Earth rotating, that curve persisted.
Okay, so, and that curve happened despite the fact that Earth is rotating. And that suggested to Aristotle that the curve went all the way around, which indicates that Earth is a sphere.
Right. So to make that work, if you're going to say, okay, but Earth's not a sphere, it's, you know, it's a flat disk, then you'd have to come up with some pretty out there explanations to then explain how a lunar eclipse works. So what do flat earthers tell themselves?
So, they've come up with some pretty far out ideas, and surprisingly, they agree that the sun and the moon are spherical. Just Earth.
Sure.
Why not?
So they're spherical, but Earth is a flat disk.
They posit that the sun and the moon are orbit Earth's north pole. So they're orbiting above this flat pancake disk and hovering directly above the pancake and never passing around to the other side.
Okay. So they don't believe in lunar eclipses at all? They just say lunar eclipses just don't happen?
Actually, they have come up with their own sort of lunar eclipse reason for why this phenomenon happens.
Okay, how does that work?
So they call it's a mysterious shadow object.
Uh-huh.
And this shadow object apparently orbits the sun, and it occasionally passes in front of the moon. And so from our point of view here, it passes in front of the moon and cast a shadow on this allegedly pancake-shaped Earth.
Okay, what do we know about this shadow object?
So we don't know much about this, except that flat earthers use it to explain lunar eclipses. And it's visible, apparently to flat earthers, it's visible only during these eclipses.
That's convenient.
Right. And so they say that this shadow object is tilted at about 5.15 degrees to the sun's orbital plane. And interestingly enough, that is the same angle at which the moon's orbit is tilted with respect to Earth's orbit. So they've sort of taken some science from the moon and applied it to this shadow object.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's interesting is that astronomers have already charted the orbits of all the planets for the foreseeable future, and none of them will ever come in between Earth and the moon anytime soon or ever. But they still use this to explain why the shadow crosses the moon's face during lunar eclipses.
Okay. Now, what about equinoxes? Well, first of all, so what is an equinox and how is an equinox proof that we live on a spherical Earth?
Okay, so 2 days every year, the Earth's equator passes through the center of the sun. And during those times, which are the equinoxes, the autumn equinox and the spring equinox, night and day are equal.
Okay.
But to understand sort of how flat earthers explain these equinoxes, you definitely need to throw out, you know, as we have been, a few thousand years of accepted scientific knowledge. Mm-hmm. So many of the flat earth believers agree that the sun, like we were saying, it perfectly circles the ring of the equator on the equinox. So while we might envision the sun as this enormous ball of exploding gas that's 93 million miles away, but a flat earther would see the sun as this little tiny spotlight about 32 miles across, hovering, you know, between 400 and 700 miles above Earth.
Okay, so they're just basically restructuring the sun.
Exactly.
Entirely. Okay.
So the sun's size, where it's mm-hmm. located.
Yeah, okay.
And during these equinoxes, they see the sun as perfectly circling the ring of the equator. On the Flat Earth Wiki page, they say that the sun moves in circles around the North Pole. And so when
And the North Pole is directly at the center
right,
of the day.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. And so when it's over your head, it's day. When it's not, it's night. And the light of the sun is confined to this limited area. So it sort of acts like a spotlight upon Earth. And during the equinoxes, as the sun's circling in this perfect loop around the equator, it casts light on half of the disk. This Earth is the disk.
Okay, there's so many.
At any given time.
there's so many. I have so many questions. All right, what are the issues with proposing this explanation,
well,
for lack of a better word, for the
equinoxes? For one, the sun would never set.
Right, if we had a little spotlight going overhead. Yeah, okay.
So for the sun to appear to rise and set as it does on the equinox, due east and then set due west on a flat earth where some cities are physically many times farther away from the sun than others, the sunlight would have to bend at hundreds of different angles simultaneously to give this effect of the equinox. So it's really not possible.
Okay. And there's yet another issue about what would happen if the Earth was flat, and that's, you know, a flat pancake-like disk would have an edge. So why wouldn't people fall off the edge?
I love this explanation.
Oh, please share this.
If you've ever played Pac-Man.
Oh, I have.
You picture the screen, the arcade screen of Pac-Man, and when our little dot-eating character gets to the edge of the screen, he goes off the screen and enters on the other side. So that's sort of how a flat earther or some flat earth believers picture this disc and why we don't fall off. So basically when a plane or other object reaches the edge of the horizon, it does one of these Pac-Man maneuvers and it sort of teleports from one side of the planet to the other.
Hmm. Okay.
And
sure.
So
why not?
Another idea.
Why not?
Some flat earthers also believe they won't fall off the edge because we're sort of enclosed in this dome. Think of like a snow globe, and there's this dome over like if they were to climb over the ice wall, they wouldn't fall off because we're inside this dome.
Most flat earthers are content to just argue that the world is flat, but a person named Mike Hughes, known by many as Mad Mike Hughes, claimed that he could prove Earth's flatness by launching himself into space on a homemade rocket and flying high enough to see the curve of the planet. Over the past few years, he made several launch attempts, and the latest of them ended in tragedy, and he was killed when the rocket crashed. Here to talk to us about that is Brandon Spector, a senior writer at Live Science. Brandon, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me, Mindy.
You wrote an article about Mad Mike's latest attempt to self-launch. First of all, who is he, and what exactly was he trying to accomplish?
So Mad Mike Hughes was a professional limo driver. He was a daredevil. And as of a couple of years ago, a voice in the flat earth conspiracy theory community, he eventually wanted to build a sort of rocket balloon hybrid, something he called a raccoon, that could carry him 62 miles up into the sky where he could see the curvature of the earth, or as he believed, the lack of curvature, and prove that earth was flat. And to do that, he was sort of building his following and fundraising base with a series of steam-powered rocket launches. His first launch was in 2014, and he built a steam-powered rocket basically out of scrap parts and things he got on Craigslist, old parachutes from previous stunts he had did. And he launched himself off of a ramp 1,374 feet in an arc over the desert. And he hit the ground pretty hard in that first launch and said he was in a walker for 2 weeks after that. But a couple of years later, he was at it again. In 2018, he did his second launch, which was this time he had a launch apparatus that launched him straight up into the air. And he went 1,875 feet up over the desert that time, deployed his parachutes, sailed back down, and still hit pretty hard, but he was able to walk away from that one with just a sore back. His third attempt, which was supposed to be in August 2019, was much more ambitious. He wanted to fly 5,000 feet in the air, which is about 1/7 of the way to the Kármán line. That's the boundary between Earth's atmosphere and space. And that one kept getting moved for various reasons, mechanical difficulties. And of course, finally, he completed the launch, or attempted the launch, I should say, a couple weeks ago on February 22nd with a film crew from the Science Channel there, filming him as part of a new TV series that they were working on about homemade rocketeers. And as you know, that launch ended in failure and tragedy. It's not clear exactly what happened at this point. Someone on the scene said the rocket kind of rubbed against the launcher in a way that maybe tore the parachute or something. But it seems that Mike's parachute failed to deploy. And when he came down, he came down hard and crash landed into the desert, and he died.
With all these ambitious attempts, would he ever have gone high enough to see the planet's curvature, or as he said, the lack of curvature?
Well, I think Mike himself knew that he wasn't going to get the height he needed just with the steam-powered rocket he was making in his garage. And he said in interviews beforehand that these launches, taking him a couple thousand feet in the air, weren't about proving anything. They were more about the stunt itself. He's a daredevil at the end of the day, and was trying to, you know, raise awareness about his stunts and eventually acquire enough funding to build something more substantial, a kind of rocket balloon hybrid that could, you know, theoretically take him that high. And I think that could have been possible with enough funding and technical know-how. You know, there's balloon companies today that say they'll take you up to high enough to see the curvature of the Earth. As to why Mike wanted to do that himself and not, you know, trust anyone else, I think as part of his drive as a daredevil, he wants to inspire people with something he's done on his own, or he wanted to, I should say. But it would have taken a lot of work, a lot of money, a lot of technical know-how, I think. And as we can see from his three launches, Mike just didn't have the resources to get that done.
To make things even more complicated, he wanted to do these launches over public lands, right?
That's true. Well, he initially, for his 2018 launch, he was going to launch in a state park in the Mojave Desert. But when the Bureau of Land Management found out, they put the kibosh on that. He would have needed a certain type of permit to hold an event, and he didn't go through the process to get a license for this. And you know, I'm not sure they would want someone, the government would want someone launching a homemade rocket and potentially injuring or killing themselves on their land anyway. So he had to readjust his plan and move a couple miles down the road, I believe, to someone's private property.
It's not just him, though. In the last few years, there have been celebrities who've said they genuinely believe that this idea of a flat Earth is something that's true, even though there's thousands of years worth of observations and data that clearly says it's not. Why would anyone think that this is true?
That's a very good question. I think part of it just goes to the nature of conspiracy theories. And we can turn to Matt and Mike's, some of his interviews to get a little insight into what he was thinking. He once said that he first started researching flat earth conspiracy theories after 9/11, which makes a certain amount of sense. There are, you know, loads of conspiracy theories around 9/11, a lot of them stemming from a mistrust in the government and in the media. And mistrust is certainly one of the fundamentals of conspiracy theories. But I think there's also a certain level of comfort that people take in conspiracy theories. And 9/11 is a good example of this. It was such a senseless and tragic event that, you know, it almost seemed unreal. And, you know, like something that couldn't possibly happen in the world we thought we lived in. And there must be some other explanation. And I think people take comfort in conspiracy theories because they provide someone or something to blame for the chaos and uncertainty and senselessness around us. And they also can lead to a community of like-minded people who feel the same way. As for the flat earth conspiracy theory, I'm not sure what exactly about it draws people despite all the scientific evidence, but it does have, it's sort of like a granddaddy of conspiracy theories. To believe it, you have to mistrust the government, you have to mistrust NASA, you have to mistrust history, you know, all the thinkers who have, you know, found ways to prove the Earth is, in fact, round. And you sort of have to mistrust scientists and science in general. And that's something that Mad Mike has actually said before. Here's a quote. He said, "I don't believe in science," which is sort of a baffling thing to hear from somebody who builds rockets.
Yeah, that's kind of counterintuitive.
Exactly. But there it is. I think there's just sort of perfect storm of mistrust around the flat earth conspiracy theory.
You mentioned that a hallmark of these conspiracy theories is a mistrust in government, a mistrust in science. That's kind of a strange attitude for someone to take, someone like Mad Mike, who considered himself to be an engineer and someone who at least cared enough about science to learn how to build a rocket.
Well, exactly. And I'm not sure how people like Mad Mike chose to reconcile that. But, you know, if, to him, NASA was full of Freemasons, and SpaceX was a big sham, and all this rocket launch footage we see is fabricated. And part of Mike's goal was to prove for himself that the Earth had a curvature or didn't. But yeah, it's definitely counterintuitive using science and engineering to prove that science and engineering is false.
I've been talking to Brandon Spector, senior writer at Live Science. Check out his article about Mad Mike Hughes on Live Science. The link is in the show notes. Brandon, thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, no problem, Mindy.
The laws of physics and planetary science explain how we know Earth is a sphere. And it's not just Earth. Gravity shapes all planets into spheres. Planets, moons, all kinds of worlds, even if they're not perfect globes. So some examples.
Gas giants like Saturn and Jupiter, they're big and spinning fast, so they sort of bulge around the middle.
Right. So Saturn is actually nearly 11% thicker around its middle, and Jupiter is around 7% thicker, according to NASA. So they look sort of like basketballs that someone's sitting on.
Same with Uranus and Neptune. They're both 2% thicker in the middle because of this spinning.
Right, right. And Earth and Mars, because they're smaller planets and they spin slower, so they're actually rounder. And Earth is only about 0.3% thicker around its middle than it is tall. And Mars is about 0.6% thicker. So not only is Earth round, it's actually one of the rounder planets in our solar system.
But what might our planet be like if it had somehow formed into a flattened disk?
So today's final mystery is, what if the Earth was flat?
So first, I think we need to look at how do planets form?
Right. So planets take shape in the dust clouds that surround stars. So if you imagine there's a star and it's surrounded by this this cloud of dust and gas and bits of rock. So these particles slam into each other, and these collisions, they fuse kind of like packed snow and snowballs. So all of this, you know, rock and dust, they start sticking together, and more collisions with bigger objects, they get bigger and bigger, and they're held together by gravity. And so they're sort of molded and shaped into a sphere as they grow.
So if we were to create a disk in space, how would that happen, or how could that happen?
Okay, well, David Stevenson, who's a planetary scientist at Caltech in Pasadena, California, he told Life Science that shaping a cosmic body into a disk instead of a sphere requires very, very, very fast spinning. And so it's possible, but there's an unfortunate side effect of that, which is that super fast spinning would actually shred the planet back into tiny particles. And this is something that has been known since the 1850s, when Scottish physicist James Clerk Maxwell showed mathematically that a solid disk-like shape is just not a stable shape for planets. So, and in fact, he did research into Saturn's ring that predicted that the rings would be made up of lots of small unconnected particles rather than solid rings, and he turned out to be right. And his math also explains why there are no planet-sized disks floating around in the galaxy.
So essentially, the only way a disk would hold together is if we basically got rid of gravity, if
right.
It didn't exist.
You'd have to cancel out gravity completely. And so, yeah, that's...
So hypothetically, though, if we had, let's say we had a disk-like Earth, that no gravity... Gravity didn't exist. What would that mean for the planet?
Okay, well,
for our pancake of a planet.
Say goodbye to the atmosphere, because gravity is what holds the atmosphere in place, right? Say goodbye to the moon, because that's also linked to Earth by gravity.
Bye, moon.
Good night, moon. Right, good night, moon. Right, and so yeah, and you know, if the moon goes away, then it takes the tides with it, because the tides are created by the gravitational pull of the moon.
No more surfing.
No more. Yeah, well, that would be the least of our worries. There's no more air, which is probably a much bigger problem.
Okay, so. That's on the surface. What about the internal structure of our planet? What would happen?
Well, gravity is what shapes Earth from the innermost core to the crust. So it draws the denser materials to the center, and then in the mantle and the crust are the lighter materials. So, and the differentiation between these layers is actually why we have a magnetic field around Earth. So the outer core at Earth's center kind of acts like a giant magnet. So it creates this magnetosphere that protects Earth from the solar winds. And the solar winds are these waves of radiation that are spewed into space by the sun. And in fact, one of our neighboring planets was, its atmosphere was Mars. Its atmosphere was stripped away.
About 4 billion years ago, Mars actually lost its atmosphere.
And why did it lose its atmosphere? Because its magnetic field
failed.
Right. So that magnetic field is actually, you know, important to keeping our atmosphere in place. And the movement of the tectonic plates, that also is something that just only makes sense if Earth is a sphere.
That's right. They wouldn't line up with the observations that we see today if Earth was a flattened disk.
Exactly.
So flat earthers have different explanations for how these processes work in the absence of gravity, right?
Right. Well, because they know that these processes are there, so they have to come up with some explanation for them. But that's actually part of the problem, is that they need many different explanations to make this worldview of a flat Earth makes sense.
Because we have one. We have gravity.
Gravity, right, exactly. But if you're going to discount gravity, then you need all of these different explanations to, you know, to basically explain how everything else holds together. And their cherry-picked explanations also frequently contradict each other. And that's just not how scientific explanation works.
A geophysicist at the Columbia University Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory in New York City.
Oh, he put this really well. This is James Davis.
Yeah, exactly. He put this really well, why this doesn't work. He said, if we can explain 1,000 observations with one theory, a simple theory, that's better than explaining 1,000 observations with 1,000 theories.
Yeah, that explains it really well. So when it comes to arguments for the existence of a flat Earth, I think we pretty much flatten them.
I agree. Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science.
All of today's Flat Earth Mysteries: how do we know the Earth is round? How do flat earthers explain lunar eclipses, equinoxes, and why we don't fall off the planet? And what if the Earth was flat? Are available as Life's Little Mysteries articles on our website, livescience.com. You could also find out more about these mysteries in this podcast's notes.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our live science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally, it'll be another Life's Little Mystery. Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audioboom as part of their Audioboom Originals Network.